Our third case this morning is 2019-215, Disciplinary Counselor versus Beverly J. Corner. For the relator? No, actually, the respondent, sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Don Sheets, and I'm here on behalf of Relator, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. And I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Pardon me. Today I'm objecting to two aspects of the board case, the board's report. First, I'm asking you to reject the board's recommended sanction of a fully stayed suspension and instead suspend respondent from the practice of law for 2 years with the second year stayed on conditions. Second, I'm asking you to reject the board's recommended dismissal of count two and instead find that respondent engaged in the charged misconduct and violated Rule 3.4C. Regarding the sanction in this matter, there are three reasons to reject the board's recommended sanction. First is respondent's course of dishonest conduct that began with her first disciplinary case and continues through this one. Second is the lack of mitigation in this case. And third is respondent's continued inability to acknowledge her dishonesty, which as a result, she does not deserve credit for any additional time that she's remained suspended. Regarding her course of dishonest conduct, her first case before this court involved a misappropriation of client funds. She misappropriated funds from several clients, and when one client inquired about those funds, respondent lied and stated that there was an issue with her banking institution. So as a result, the funds weren't available, but when in reality, she had taken them for herself. In this case, respondent received an allegation that respondent was practicing law while under suspension for the first case. As a result, relator sent out a letter of inquiry with several clear and direct questions, and respondent replied and lied. Relator followed up with a second inquiry asking for more detail. Again, respondent replied and lied. The board found she was dishonest. Her dishonesty is summarized in paragraph 25 of the board report. It included lying about whether or not she paid fees at the recorder's office, whether or not she paid fees at the probate court. In fact, she affirmatively stated she didn't know who paid those fees when in fact she paid those fees. She stated she was working for some unnamed entity, that she didn't meet the parties involved in the property transfer. Additionally, that she shredded all documentation after the transaction, when in reality she was transferring property for her stepmother. She knew her stepmother. She knew the parties involved. She wasn't working for some entity or business, and she did have documentation to support the transaction. All of those.
Also, would you move the microphone a little closer to you?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. So based on the dishonesty in this case, while under suspension for the first case, which highlights the fact that the first suspension didn't work, she's actually suspended for a year, and then during that suspension lies to relator during our investigation. It shows that the suspension didn't work. So it simply doesn't make sense to follow the board's recommendation and impose a lesser sanction the second time around.
Counsel, can you clarify something for me? So she was on suspension. It was a two-year suspension with one of those years stayed, correct?
Correct.
So why would we not impose the 1 year that was stayed as part of the sanction here? Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Okay.
And we could have filed a motion to remove the stay. Mm-hmm. However, by the time the investigation was complete, I believe we were looking at a complaint around November or December of 2017. So she was eligible for reinstatement in February of 2017. I reviewed the court suspension order, and in looking in that order, I wasn't sure whether or not the stay begins upon application of reinstatement for reinstatement, or if it just begins at the conclusion of the first year. So as a result, if it had begun in February of 2017, that clock was ticking throughout 2017. So by the time our investigation was completed, we were into December. Much of that year was taken. So relator's position would be if we couldn't impose the full year, that would be an insufficient sanction for the level of dishonesty we're dealing with here.
But shouldn't it at least impact when we start, if we were to start a new sanction? Shouldn't we go back to that time period?
Well, she remains under suspension, but she acknowledged in her testimony that was her fault, essentially. That was her choice. She was eligible for reinstatement in February of 2017. She didn't apply until August of 2017, so she chose to spend those months and remain under suspension. And when she did apply, she had insufficient CLE credit. She hadn't complied with this court's suspension order. So as a result, that application was denied.
But in that application, she represented that she was current on her CLE credits, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And she was far short.
That's correct, far short. Many,
and
many hours
And she didn't
short.
Withdraw that application.
She did not.
And so when you say she was eligible for reinstatement, she really wasn't eligible unless she had done all of the requisite conditions. She didn't. She said she did. Obviously, the people who processed this caught it and said no.
That's absolutely correct. You're right. So in that sense, she was not eligible because she hadn't complied with this court's order. But had she taken her CLEs, that was all within her control is what I'm getting at, I suppose. It wasn't any additional suspension wasn't imposed upon her. And we did consider that conduct, and we charged it in count one of the complaint. Now, the board dismissed it, and our interpretation of the board's report is it was based on a credibility determination, and we chose not to object to that count, but it was a part of our complaint. Based on her own choices, she remained under suspension. It wasn't anything that was imposed upon her.
She's currently suspended.
Correct. She is currently suspended. So the reason we shouldn't go back and consider that, it really leads into my third point. She's continued to fail to acknowledge her dishonesty. So not only did the first year of suspension not work, but any additional months of suspension for which she's been suspended under from the practice of law hasn't worked either. In her transcript, you'll be able to read her testimony as it relates to relator's letters, her responses. Those are in the record as well, stipulated exhibits 26 through 32. You can look at our letter, our question. You can look at her letter response to our question, and you can read her testimony about those responses. It's incredible the amount of denial. It is clearly dishonest conduct, but she is unable to acknowledge it. So as a result, all of these months of suspension haven't worked. So she doesn't deserve credit for those months under suspension and that she can't even acknowledge that she's done something wrong. And as a result, the public still needs protected from her, essentially, until she can refrain from dishonest conduct and even acknowledge that she's engaged in dishonest conduct.
And so one of the things in paragraph 40 of the report, and it relates exactly to what we're talking about and trying to do the math here on how long she's been suspended and for what cause, I think we all agree she's suspended now under her own volition for up not, in, correct?
Yes.
The panel has taken notice of the fact that the respondent remains under suspension from her first suspension, which was a 2-year suspension with 1-year stayed. This went into effect in February of 16. As of today, she remains suspended and has been suspended for more than 3 years. There's no question this pending case had a chilling effect on her attempts at reinstatement. What does that mean?
I think what the board is referring to is once this formal complaint was certified under the reinstatement provision, section 24 of GovBar Rule 5, she can no longer be reinstated. So I believe that's what the board was referring to. But however, if she had just complied with the court suspension order, taken her CLE credits, and filed a proper application, she could be practicing today.
She would have been practicing, and then this would have been pending, and she would not have been suspended while this was pending, correct?
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
So when we look at that fact, we feel this case has caused her to serve longer suspension than originally dictated by her first suspension, and as such, she has been punished for this case.
We disagree.
What do you make of that logic?
We disagree with that finding. This was all within her control. But frankly, this is part and parcel of how she practices. She has a concerning inability to read, understand, and follow court orders. And that harkens back to her first disciplinary case. She mishandled a bankruptcy matter. She was ordered twice by that bankruptcy court to disgorge funds she had taken. She didn't follow those orders. When applying for reinstatement, which was the subject of our count one, she failed to follow this court suspension order and ensure that she had a proper application. Which leads into my second objection, we ask you to reject the dismissal of count two because she failed to follow this court's suspension order and verify that the employing attorney had registered the employment relationship with our office. So this is just part and parcel of how she practices. She doesn't deserve credit. She mishandles her own matters and can't read, understand, and follow court orders. So she simply doesn't deserve credit for any additional time under suspension.
Could you comment on the lack of mitigation, which you mentioned earlier?
Thank you. Yeah, so the board found a single mitigating factor, the absence of a dishonest or selfish motive. We dispute that, and we ask you to reject that finding as well. In fact, she did have a dishonest or selfish motive. She was concerned that she would, at least she was at least concerned that she was engaged in the practice of law while under suspension. She was helping her stepmother transfer property. She's paying filing fees. She's filing documents.
Isn't that more for the client's stepmother than herself?
What was her stepmother, I believe.
That's what I mean. But weren't those acts more to benefit the stepmother than to be a motive of selfishness or self-motivation?
Yeah, she was helping her mother with the transfer. But however, that really toes the line of practicing law. I mean, her stepmother asked Respondent to do this because she's not a lawyer. Respondent is a lawyer, so she knows what to do and how to effectuate this transfer. So that's what Respondent was concerned about, was being engaged in the practice of law while under suspension.
But was there a determination that this was the practice of law? Because there are people in the real estate industry who do things like this regularly.
That's her position. Unfortunately, we were unable to prove what we believed was occurring, which was practicing while under suspension. So we did not charge that. We didn't believe we could meet clear and convincing evidence. But however, that's the dishonest motive for her to lie to relator. If nothing was happening that was inappropriate, then tell us. Tell us you're helping your stepmother. Tell us that you're just paying filing fees and doing administrative type tasks. When you review those letters and you review her responses in the context of what she was actually doing, it's clear that she was concealing and being deceptive.
And that's the dishonest factor, is that the lies and the denial that she knew who was doing any of this when, in fact, she was doing it.
That's correct. That's correct.
As opposed to, as you said, admitting up front, yeah, I did a filing fee, but you don't have to be a lawyer to go do a filing fee. I did this, but,
So just say that if that's the case. But if you're concerned that you're violating the rules, then you have a reason to conceal your conduct. And that's the dishonest and selfish motive. So without that mitigating factor, she has no mitigation. All she has is aggravation. She has a prior disciplinary case for dishonest conduct. She has a failure to acknowledge the wrongfulness of her misconduct. And she has a dishonest and selfish motive. So as a result, there's no reason to deviate from this board's history of imposing an actual suspension when an attorney has engaged in a course of dishonest conduct. And that'll help protect the public. It sends the right message to respondent. It sends the right message to the bar that if you misappropriate funds, lie about it, and then lie to relator under suspension, that you're not going to practice uninterrupted. And that's going to help protect the public.
What are you asking for?
I'm asking this court to reject the board's recommendation and suspend respondent from the practice of law for 2 years, with the second year stayed subject to conditions. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. And may it please the court, I am Philip King, and I'm here on behalf of Beverly Corner, the respondent. To address a couple of points that Relator's counsel mentioned, the first being the sanction. The board recommended a fully stayed 1 year suspension with conditions to start from the point that the respondent is reinstated. One of the reasons that our relator has laid out for the sanction being inappropriate was the course of dishonest conduct, beginning with the prior case that Ms. Corner is currently under suspension for. We believe that Ms. Corner has already been sanctioned for that case. So we're not here to rehash that case and the sanction that we have. But then the course of dishonest conduct that we're talking about in this case stems from a four-count complaint. And it's pretty huge. It's not very common. You start with a four-count complaint that is whittled down to just one count being found, and the count isn't a count that there's underlying misconduct with the client. It is that the respondent didn't answer truthfully when asked about the filing fee and who she was doing it for the entity. Now, there was also conversation.
Counsel, that is a legitimate breach.
Yes, Your Honor.
For which a finding can be made of failure to cooperate, dishonesty, you know, and correct?
Correct. And not arguing otherwise. We're just talking about...
Are you arguing that she wasn't dishonest?
No. We're not arguing that
she was dishonest.
She was dishonest, and she was appropriately found in violation of that rule, which brings to the point that Relator's Counsel was mentioning. The board found mitigation, that there was a lack of the selfish, dishonest motivation, and Relator's Counsel argued that because she knew that she was violating a rule, that was the motivation for lying, where that's, it really wasn't the concern. Ms. Corner wholeheartedly thought that the grievance was fictitious, that this was not a legitimate grievance as far as being reported by someone who actually believed she was in violation of the disciplinary rule. That does not, and to be clear, that does not excuse when disciplinary authority asks you for information. That does not excuse not providing it to them. I'm just going to explain the motivation was one of a feeling that she was being wrongfully investigated, wrongfully prosecuted. So it wasn't that she thought she was doing something wrong. It was more of a feeling of being harassed. Again, does not excuse if disciplinary counsel asks for information, you not giving that information. I'm just clarifying the motivation. It wasn't that she thought she had done something wrong. It was more just the process.
But complaint that when a complaint is brought to the disciplinary council, it can be brought several different ways. For one thing, the disciplinary council can sua sponte, based on a newspaper article, determine that there is room for investigation here, correct?
Correct, absolutely.
And a unsigned complaint is, while maybe doesn't happen that often, it certainly can start an investigation. There's nothing to preclude that, correct?
Correct.
So your client, what are you saying? She basically said, well, this isn't legit, so I don't have to be?
What I'm saying is that she had a human response. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, I am aware that disciplinary counsel, it doesn't actually have to be a grievance. They could find something. They could drive down the street, see a billboard. You know, it does not matter. What I'm just clarifying that, you know, we have a human respondent that had a reaction. I, as counsel, as an attorney, ethics counsel, would not advise my client not to respond. I'm just clarifying that that was the reason why she didn't. Not a great reason, not a good reason, but it isn't because she was concerned and was trying to hide misconduct on her part. That being said, moving on to the violation 3.4C. The argument here that we've laid out in our brief is this particular rule has to deal with ongoing litigation, the fairness to opposing counsel and parties. What we see here, and we are eager for the court to opine on this, because this might be a trend that disciplinary counsel will be charging attorneys that are in compliance with the suspension order under this violation, and whether or not this is the appropriate charge under 3.4C, whether it was intended for those types of violations, whether or not there is a GovBar rule violation, or whether or not, as the board opined, that the registration, because this all stems from the respondent failing to verify that her employer had registered her as a suspended attorney. In the board's opinion, that registration requirement is on the employer and not on the employee, and that was their reasoning, but also in support of that, we believe that 3.4, that entire list, including C, is more germane to the fairness during litigation and not whether or not someone is compliant with the court order concerning their suspension, whether there's they're in contempt of that order or whether or not there's a specific GovBar rule that should be charged instead of that. That being said, going back to what this case really is, we have a four-count complaint in which the board recommended the dismissal of three of those counts. And the count that did come out of it, and aptly so, was the respondent's failure to answer the inquiries of disciplinary counsel truthfully and timely. So that is the course. We believe that the board appropriately considered that the respondent has been suspended for a lengthy period. And the first suspension is a state suspension. There's no obligation that the respondent applied as soon as she can. In fact, the reason why she didn't apply, it was she hadn't obtained her CLE, but during this period, she was suffering from some health problems. So it was not the top priority at that point.
Is it clear, or is there an understanding why she said she had completed her CLE requirements that make her eligible for reapplying when she had not?
I'm afraid I don't know, Your Honor. Okay. I mean, clearly she didn't. So I don't know the reason why she had indicated that when that was not the case.
I guess especially to the entity who would know, obviously, whether that was true.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. But in essence, I don't believe that because she chose to remain out of the practice of law, whether that necessarily should result in a penalty. The point that she has been away from the practice of law for almost 3 years, I believe, is.
But that was her own doing.
Correct. Correct.
Why should she get any mitigation or consideration for not complying with what it took in order to be reinstated?
And she actually did not apply for reinstatement till quite some time after she was.
That was her fault.
Correct. I appreciate that, Your Honor. I just don't know. And if the court finds it significant, whether she stayed out and chose not to be reinstated, The point is that she wasn't reinstated. There's been no proof that she has been practicing while under suspension. So it's really just a fact. It's really just a fact that she hasn't been practicing and is unable to been practicing for that long of a time. So it's appropriate to consider that, you know, she has been subject to that sanction the entire time. And certainly once this began, she would not have been able to reapply even if she was eligible by meeting the CLE requirements. If there are no further questions, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Counsel?
Thank you. I'd like to address three points. First is the prior discipline. We're certainly not trying to rehash the first case, but it is an aggravating factor. And the history of dishonesty as well as the current dishonesty must be considered. It's really what drives this case. Regarding the dishonest or selfish motive, respondent's counsel had indicated that respondent felt wronged by the investigation, felt harassed. The way I hear that is a selfish motive. She was looking out for herself. She felt harassed. She wasn't going to accept that, so she was dishonest as a result. Dishonest, selfish, it's all aggravating. Regarding the application of Rule 3.4C, I ask you not to narrow that rule in the way that respondent is asking you to. The rules are written in a general way because they need to apply to a variety of contexts, the whole practice of law. to narrow the rule in the way that they're asking essentially is to weaken the rules. Their strength is their flexibility. Respondents' counsel in his brief cited comment 7 to 1.4 because it uses the word litigation, I presume. However, what's clear under that comment is that a court can create an obligation by rule or order, and this court created one by its February 2016 suspension order. And one of the cases cited in respondents' counsel brief is the Shaw case. That involved a guardianship matter. A family instituted a guardianship for their elderly grandmother. She passed a few days after the guardianship was created. Based upon my reading of the decision, it was an uncontested matter. It's not that classic sort of civil or criminal litigation. However, the attorney in that matter took fees in violation of local court rule, and that was found to have violated 3.4C, and that wasn't sort of in the classic litigation context. So the rule has been applied in a variety of manners historically, and we ask you to apply it in this manner as well. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.